Good morning. So I used to serve at another church here in Kansas City. I don't know if some of you probably knew that. I was for a while one of the assistant rectors up at St. Michael's, up at 67th and Knoll. It's a grand church, a beautiful place, and I'm famous for a couple of things that I did in my 4 years there, and I'm infamous for a couple other things. I was a much younger person back then, right? One of them is whenever I go there, people remember one particular sermon that I gave because of my opening line. So it's not that shocking, but I think at the time it was maybe more than they were used to. So it was a 4th of July weekend, and it was one of my first sermons that I gave there, and I'm going to give you my opening line. Are you ready? The first time I heard a John Philip Sousa march, I peed my pants. That's all they remember. My 4 years of ministry, my work there, that's the one thing that everybody at St. Michael's seems to be able to remember. Now let me fill in the rest of the sermon. I'm from a smaller town in Kansas called El Dorado, which is near Wichita. And my family has been there for a long time. So they were early land settlers there. And so there's lots of history for all kinds of different sides of my family and everything that goes back there, including service in different levels of government, everything in the church, to you know the different work and different names on buildings. If you drive through town, you'll see our name on some buildings in a few places and different things like that. So there's always lots of story, and on this particular day, I was with my family. It was the 4th of July parade in 1976. So if you remember your history, 1976 was kind of a big year. It was the 200th anniversary of the founding of our country, and so there was lots of parades throughout the country planned. It was kind of a grand celebration. So we were there in the small town. I was there with my grandfather, both my grandfathers. My father was there, my mom, my brothers, the whole clan. Some of my aunts and uncles were there. We were lined up for the parade, and they had been telling stories. They like to talk history about different things that people in our family did. My grandfather remembered his grandfather, who had served in the Civil War, was part of the Kansas Free Staters and had gone down and was later dismissed from his service in the Army in Duval's Bluff in Arkansas. So he would tell stories about him. They would also talk about their brother who had served in World War I and all the different things that had happened to him. He had come back and he was sort of crazy. That's an understatement. Because he had suffered from mustard gas poisoning while he was in World War I, and he was sort of cared for by the family in different ways. I didn't know him. He had gone before I'd been born. So hearing stories about that. My uncle was there. He'd been wounded in Iwo Jima. And he talked about his story of what had happened. He served in the Navy for 30 years. And my dad would talk about his stories in Korea. And about that time, I'm hearing all these stories. My grandmother's there. She's talking about raising children in the Depression. We're hearing all this. I'm like, you know, I'm 7. And you're hearing all these stories. And then here comes the marching band. My 7-year-old body is like, this is something else. And then right behind it, there was a tank. Oh my God. And I saw it, and I just went, ah! And I had cowboy boots on. Slosh, 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 slosh. Back to the house. That's my memory of 1976. I think about that time, and I think of the stories and the different things that we do. And so, you know, when we come around to these days, we throw in some of our religious songs. Believe it or not, the national anthem is a religious song. It's part of our hymnal. We'll sing other things today, both to remember, but also to tell the story and to remember in different ways. But there was also something else that happened that year for me that probably was even more important. That's the year my family started really attending the Episcopal Church in town. And there was a woman that I met named Marilyn White, who would have a profound impact on me as a person. Marilyn was a right one Episcopalian. Do you all know what I mean by that? So write one are the these and thous. Take a stuffy English person and make it more stuffy. Sorry if you really love that. I love write one, so don't think that. She went to the early service, and at the early service, you did not shake hands at the passing of the peace. So when you were there, I remember coming back from church camp one year, and it was in my, Drew and I were there, we were in our huggy, excited camp mode, and I came in, and we had the peace of the Lord be always with you, and I went up to Marilyn and said, Marilyn, the peace of the Lord, and she assumed the prayer stance. Because to shake hands was to denigrate the Lord in her mind. She was very strict about her faith. Yeah, don't clap in church ever. No, not at all. She was very serious about her faith. She was part of something called the Daughters of the King. You would find her often at church at 7:30 in the morning before the 8 o'clock service, steeped in her sense of prayer. And her life, her husband was a physician in town, and her life was dedicated to serving students with special needs, students that were on the edge. She worked at the local college and also worked in other ways. She ran a tutoring program in the community. She was interested in all kinds of different people. And she sort of took me under her wing, unbeknownst to me. And all kinds of things happened. I wouldn't know about this until I was an adult. She made sure I had a chance to go to church camp every summer when I was old enough. She made sure that somebody was there, and she would encourage me. She'd call me and keep me connected to the church. She would make sure different things were happening. She would not shake my hand during the service, no matter what. However, she was making sure. I didn't realize what she was doing. She was mentoring me, but I had to paint her fence several times. So I painted it once, and they didn't like the color, so she called me back and had me paint it again. And the whole time, being outside, she'd be working in her garden while I was painting, talking with me. And I probably shared the story of her 500 clay flower pots that were in the back. I preached about that before. She had me wash those flower pots twice. They weren't usable. But the whole purpose was she would be out there with me talking. And she'd tell stories. And she'd talk about what it meant to have faith. And she'd talk about prayer. And we'd talk about everything under the sun. We'd talk about what was going on in the world. We'd talk about what was happening. We'd talk about school. We'd talk about friends. We'd talk about family. And then one time I remember she talked, she said, Gar, you know, each one of these flower pots could be a prayer. She's teaching me contemplative prayer. She said, each one of these flower pots could be a prayer. Every time you wash a prayer, you should pray for somebody that you know. She goes, I know we got a lot of flower pots here, so you got a lot of people to pray for. And this is kind of who she was. She was interested in that kind of faith. When you dig a little deeper into her story, she had such compassion for those around her, and it was born of her own family story and of other people who had cared for her and other ways that her family had suffered or she had suffered. And yet there she was offering that deep sense of faith. I think of her when I hear the scripture that we have for today about faith. This incredible story, both of the woman who is hemorrhaging and also of Jairus' daughter, the 12-year-old, who is thought to be gone. We hear of Jesus' life-giving spirit, but we hear something else that might get missed in the Song of Solomon. Did you hear that about God's intention? God didn't make death. God doesn't like it when living things die. It goes on to talk about our sense of being regenerative with God. In other words, being generative, being that which creates, is part of our place with God. Paul continues that teaching, saying we should be above all reproach. We should be above all things. We should strive for these greater goods. We should strive for this. And then Jesus, in the midst of that, comes out in the gospel and says, I'm walking, and someone touched my cloak, and power went out, and they were healed. And Jesus notices. Now, this isn't Jesus wearing tight jeans and notices. This is Jesus wearing flowing robes, just barely touching the hem of the garment. We miss sometimes, but it would have been the tallits. If you have Jewish friends, sometimes you'll see the tallits that have been hanging out. It would have been just a string. The strings are a symbol of faith or a symbol of history or a symbol of the roots of God. And so this woman touches, just barely touches, what would be considered the hem or the end of the string. And that's enough. And then the leader of the synagogue comes, who is terrified, and says, "Save my daughter." And Jesus comes and calls her out and says, "Talitha, come. Talitha, come. Talitha, come out. Daughter, come out." What's that mean for us? What does it mean right now in this day, right here, to be people of faith? I met Marilyn in 1976. Do you remember all the stuff that was going on back then? If you were alive. If you weren't alive, you remember reading about it in textbooks. It was a strange time. We were not that far off from one of our presidents being assassinated. We were barely sort of coming up on election after one of our presidents had resigned, and the first sort of non-elected president had ever served. You remember, Gerald Ford was appointed to be vice president, became president, and never been elected. It was on the cusp and in the middle of some of the oil crisis when we had to wait in line. Anybody remember that, waiting in line for days, I guess? I don't know how bad it was around here, but I remember being in line. I remember being annoyed. I remember being hot. That's what I remember about the gas crisis. I was a little kid. It was a time when we weren't sure about the world. At our school, we practiced two drills. Do you guys remember this? One drill was, because we lived in Kansas, was tornado drills, three actually, which we practiced a fire drill, and what else did we practice? Bomb drills. But not bomb drills, the kind that we might think of today, but we would hide in case of what? The unthinkable. It was on a regular basis, once a quarter we practiced. You'd walk around town, you'd see the civil defense signs around, so you knew where to go. This was sort of the world, and if you watched the news in the evening, you'd hear the announcements of our DEFCON condition or what was happening. I remember growing up listening to Walter Cronkite and others talk about what was happening in the world. We weren't sure sort of what was going on. That was not long after the Olympics and some of the challenges that happened in Germany with the Israeli team being shot. It was a world that was unsteady. What I remember being at that parade and that day is hearing all the other stories of things that had happened in my family, the survival, and also the deep sense of faith. I remember my grandmother talking about having her children right before the Great Depression, raising both her boys during that time. My uncle was born in 26, my father was born in 29. And hearing the stories of what she had to do to maintain food on the table and the work that they did in the little house that they eventually bought for all of $500. I remember hearing stories of things that had gone on before that, and all of them with a sense of faith and strength. And she would talk about her son going off and joining the Navy and heading off into the Pacific. My father going off to Korea, and other stories that would happen, and the challenges, and some of their friends who would not come back, and their support for each other and how they got through. And steeped in that was a sense of faith, just like the faith we hear about in the scriptures for today. And yet their attempt to try to make the world somehow better around them. And maybe sometimes we sort of lose touch with some of that. But think about what Jesus is teaching us in the scriptures for today about hope. Think of what we're hearing in that beautiful story from the Wisdom of Solomon about being generative partners with God. Think about what Paul is saying about how we go about living our life, how we go about taking those great ideals and placing them into reality. Then what does it mean for us to be people of faith right now? You won't want to hear this, but the world is always going to be complicated. There will never be an idyllic time. We might have idyllic moments. We might have those moments when we're at the beach and the weather's perfect and the things look great, we might have those moments when it seems like the table is filled and it's joyful and it's wonderful and we should embrace those moments. We have those moments when we see justice and we see peace and we see things work out the way they're supposed to work out, but it might not always be that way. But really what we're called to be is to be faith in the midst. I think that's where that strength is born, or where even hope is born. So maybe when we're watching the news, or maybe when we're hearing the different things that are going on, it might seem impossible. We might seem scared. We might seem, you know, all the different things that we can see. When we bring it down a little local, we might be shocked at what happens in the world around us, or we may be concerned or not sure what it's going to mean. We might hear of layoffs. We might hear of changes. We might hear of crime. We might hear of even all kinds of other things. Even in our personal life, when we're going through our own struggles, whether it be the loss of a loved one or a diagnosis or the struggle just sometimes to get up and get going. Where do we find our deep sense of faith? I remember washing those flower pots with Marilyn and hearing those stories and being taught to pray. She was teaching me a style of prayer called contemplative prayer. It's when you sort of do something and you think a little deeper about what you're doing. You have to be careful about it because it can lead you all kinds of crazy places, just so you know. But it can also lead you to the heart and to the center of what it means to be faithful. I remember being at her funeral, and for this little town that was packed, there was about 800 people there, I think, in the church. It was packed all the way. Our little church had to open the doors. They're out to the parish hall, out over here. And when you go through the room, it was student after student, person after person, all of her flower pots that she'd been praying for when she refused to shake our hand at the peace, when she seemed stuffy, when she seemed distant. It was all those people that she was praying for and caring for and reaching out to endlessly and offering faith. She was being that sense of being generative, like we hear in the Wisdom of Solomon. She was living out the words just like Paul was talking. And she was the hem of the garment of Jesus for all those that encountered her, because that's where her soul was grounded, and that's who she was. So the challenge for you this week as you go out is to be a person of faith in the midst of the strangeness of the world, in the grand sounds of the marching band, in the tank that's coming behind it, in the great crowd, and all the sounds, and all the excitement, and everything that might just terrify you. In so many ways, is to be faith in the midst of all that and to offer hope to those around you. So regenerate, be generative, live the words of Paul, and be that hymn of Jesus in the world. And Jesus is calling us, Talitha Kum. Get up. Amen.